This is the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 16th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. Welcome to edition number 260. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this special edition, MMA, Mackin, Mario, and Andy look at the October 15th local government elections. Kennedy Stewart, a one-term blunder at Vancouver City Hall ended by Ken Sim and ABC Vancouver. In Surrey, Brenda Locke gave Doug McCallum the boot. Mario Canseco of Research Co. and Andy Yan of the Simon Fraser University City Program join me to look back at the night of history. And you'll hear from new Surrey Mayor Brenda Locke and Cash Heed, the former Solicitor General of BC who was elected to Richmond City Council. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. It's MMA time again. Mackin, Mario, and Andy looking back at the October 15th history made in British Columbia, the local government elections. I'm Mackin. We've got Mario Canseco from Research Co. and we've got Andy Yan from the City Program at Simon Fraser University looking at the night that was, especially in the two biggest cities of the province. The end of the road for Kennedy Stewart as mayor of Vancouver and his Forward Together experiment, and the beginning of the ABC era under Ken Sim, the new mayor of Vancouver, making history, the first Chinese-Canadian mayor of Vancouver. It's been 136 years of white males, and now we have Ken Sim as the new mayor of Vancouver, mayor-elect of Vancouver. Also, the second coming of Doug McCallum is over in Surrey. Here comes Brenda Locke, the new mayor of Surrey, who is making a priority to cancel the Surrey Police Service and to keep on with the RCMP. Mario and Andy, what a night it was. An almost complete collapse of the left in Vancouver. I think my theory is the Kennedy Stewart captain's list, when that was found, that appeared to expose who was backing Stewart. And those that were backing Stewart, I believe, decided to sit on their wallets because they didn't want their names attached to the fundraising machine. We didn't see a Kennedy Stewart advertising blitz to come anywhere near ABC Vancouver during the last week of the campaign. And I think that threw Kennedy Stewart into a tailspin that he never recovered from. Andy, what do you think? Was that captain's list something which exposed Kennedy Stewart as someone in the developer's pocket, not a politician of the people?
I think it didn't help. I think the fact that, you know, Vancouver is over 50% renters, and yet at the same time, a mayor who portrayed himself as with the renters weren't necessarily funded by the renters, but certainly it was a non-brand. And I think that it's really, I think, an interesting element, because of course I think that, you know, frankly, there's probably an element of a Venn diagram between the donors to Kennedy as well as the donors to Ken Sim. It's just that the fact that you found that list on Broadway. So I think that it's really one of those things that really, I think, did not help Kennedy. And yet at the same time, I think that it's interesting to kind of see Ken just dominate the number of votes right now. And I think that really, I think, talks to the machine that Ken Sim had developed. And really, I think, the potency in terms of what happened and also what happened in the turnout.
Mario, Kennedy Stewart and Forward Together had their election night party at the Paradox, the old Trump Hotel, which isn't so old, on Georgia Street. It's owned by the same company that didn't build the social housing at Little Mountain. Bad optics there. What do you think was the difference for the ABC Vancouver succeeding and Kennedy Stewart failing?
Well, I think there was an expectation that after the David Eby endorsement, there would be some sort of movement from the BC NDP to try to help out, to try to use some lists, to try to get those voters out and to support Kennedy Stewart. And I think there was an expectation from the center-left and left voter that that was the thing that was going to happen, and it didn't actually materialize. I think there was an expectation that maybe one or two or maybe three or four forward together candidates would be elected. There is a possibility that one might get in. We're still counting some of the ballots, but it's certainly not the down ballot support that they expected. And I think part of the strategy for Ken Sim was we want to get majorities everywhere. This is our team. These are the people who we're running with. And I think in the latter stages of the campaign, it really turned a lot of people who maybe were dissatisfied with the way things were going in the city and saying, this is the vehicle for change and this is where we're going. You know, part of what we saw here was the expectation of very, very well-known people, credible people running campaigns, who actually weren't able to get to the level that they were expecting because there was this massive movement to coalesce around Ken Sim.
I think right now I'm looking at the stats right now. It's like it's school trustees, parks boards. I mean, it's dominated by ABC. Like, it's not even close. If you were on the ABC team, you are on the board. So I think that that really, again, testifies to the kind of organization, to the kind of messaging that ABC did.
Is that we're really talking about the difference between the campaign you see on Twitter and then the campaign in real life. And really, I think the mastery in terms of the organization and get the vote out from Ken Sims. I mean, right now you're looking at Ken Sims, you know, beating out his adding the to his level of support, I should say, by almost 20,000 votes. And that's a testament to really his organization outside of social media.
And Mario, we saw that Kennedy Stewart basically integrated his campaign with the David Eby leadership campaign. A lot of crossover there, some of the same faces and names. They were working together in so many different ways, in different forums, different contexts, but they were sharing a lot there. And in this case, you know, David Eby is trying to stave off the challenge from Angeli Apadurai, who has a home within the One City Party. It looks like the NDP vote didn't come out like it did in 2018. And the endorsement from Jagmeet Singh didn't really work either. And, you know, Jagmeet Singh has some questions about him because of his alliance with Justin Trudeau. So it looks like the NDP right now is in many ways rudderless. It's lost its man in Vancouver City Hall and its foothold in Vancouver City Hall. And at a time when they're trying to get to a new evolution to replace John Horgan, the NDP seems lost. And it looks like the ABC, which is the BC Liberal farm team in Vancouver, is the new wave, the new way things are going.
Well, it's certainly a situation that is related to the expectations of a city that has consistently voted over the past few years for center-left parties. I think a lot of people looked at the results of 2018 and thought, well, if Kennedy Stewart gets part of a lot of the vote that went to Shauna Sylvester, he'll be competitive, maybe 40, 45%. There was an expectation also at the end that, you know, if Mark Morrison did well, he was going to take some of those votes from the left. But Mark Morrison didn't do that well. So it's not as if you're looking at a situation where the city is fundamentally center-right. I think it's more the disappointment with the way the campaign went and certain things that happened during the course of the past few months. And it might be a case, not necessarily of the collapse of the center-left, but the fact that the center-left just wasn't as engaged as it used to be. I think there was an expectation as well of if they are able to borrow some of the NDP machinery, things will go well. A few months ago, we thought this is going to be perfect. You have this leadership race happening just a few weeks after the Vancouver election. So everybody's going to galvanize around the center-left ideology. Now we have a leadership race that is sort of up in tatters. We don't know what is going to happen. And certainly not at the level of support that they expected for Kennedy Stewart.
And the you know, ABC won it, and they like to say it's easy as 1, 2, 3, but I kind of wonder, did they spend $1 million? Did they spend $2 million? Did they spend $3 million? How much money did they spend? Because the campaign manager on the ABC campaign, Curry Malam, was the campaign manager for Kevin Falcon, and Kevin Falcon spent more than anyone else. He looked like he overspent in the BC Liberal leadership, and will they just say sorry to Elections BC down the road if they're caught going over the limits? That's another story here, because Colleen Hardwick, who finished a distant third, didn't have any developer donations, had a much smaller war chest. She part of the story she says is that this was a campaign that was won with dollars.
I think that very much it's very clear that that money did come into play, and really the issue is exactly how much money are you talking about. And I think that within this kind of conversation, I think that, you know, when Elections BC comes around, and I don't know if necessarily these folks are going to get away with, you know, the cost of six yoga pants in terms of the kind of fees. I think it could actually be quite serious if there is a level of discovered in terms of overspending. And really, I think really paints a real, if things are not what on the up and up, I think it would paint a pall about the state of local democracy in Vancouver.
And speaking of local democracy in Vancouver, Mario Canseco, we had not just Colleen Hardwick a distant third, but an even more distant fourth and fifth, Mark Marison and Fred Hardy. Mark Marison, who had the endorsement from his ex-wife, Christy Clark, in the final week, and Fred Harding, who never got the chance to really give us his announcement of his promise for an NBA franchise again. And Fred Harding, who also had some serious questions about him being a Beijing businessman, and the story that I broke about how he was actually working for Varani Real Estate to promote their Beijing sales center, where they were selling Vancouver condos to Chinese investors. Fred Harding is actually going to finish with fewer votes than he had in 2018 with Vancouver First. Talk about you know, these candidates. I mean, Colleen Hardwick won't be a voice on city council anymore, and Mark Marison and Fred Harding, serious questions about why they were running in the first place.
Well, it's certainly a situation where they underperformed the expectations, not only of the campaigns themselves, but also what a lot of people thought was going to happen as far as this actually developing into a five-person race. We need to remember that they mostly went to every single debate. We were talking about this from the guise of these five people have a shot at this. And I think the fact that they're going to finish in single digits mostly certainly suggests that that wasn't the case. I think it raises questions about the viability of some of the ideas that they were proposing. And you know, there was an expectation that team would at least elect one councillor, or they would do a little bit better on some of the other issues that we had in front of us. So it's going to be interesting to see where this goes, particularly when it comes to the ideas that Progress Vancouver was talking about, what is going to happen with some of those candidates for council. Because it's clear that in a campaign that was all about crime, like the NPA campaign, they didn't really resonate. A lot of that law and order vote ended up going to ABC.
And Andy, this is a campaign that saw a lot of discussion, discourse, even a bit of verbal conflict about Chinatown and about the downtown east side. Mm-hmm. About how they correlate with each other, and how problems of the downtown east side have been visited upon Chinatown with assaults against Chinese seniors, with vandalism, graffiti, and the lack of leadership from City Hall to mediate these problems and to help the people in the tent city on Hastings, and then help those who are trying to do business and trying to live their lives on Pender, just a few blocks away in Chinatown. Was this election won or lost on those issues? Was it a case that the wealthy Mandarin speakers on the west side and Cantonese speakers on the east side, did they come together on united in united course to support ABC? Do you think that that was one of the successes of ABC?
I think that it comes into a very, I think, straightforward message. I think that it came into really a discussion of not only the politics of just economics, it's the politics of recognition that I see you. That I think that it's talking about how Chinatown and the downtown east side not only becomes these kind of physical kind of environments in terms of a neighborhood, but then we're talking about, if you will, the abstract, the idea that the idea of Chinatown, it isn't necessarily that City Hall wasn't doing anything. Indeed, it actually does a lot, I think, in the neighborhood. But then really it's a sense of indifference, that there was a sense of indifference by some of the parties in terms of what was going on to the neighborhood, in terms of really what was going on on Hastings Street, but then also what wasn't going on in Pender in terms of the assaults. And I think that it rolled in to really an abstract idea through which really motivated voters to come out to vote for ABC. And I'm very curious to kind of see how the data is going to look like in terms of the spatial distribution of really those votes. But I think that it's how it culminated into a frustration and a clarion call to come and vote for ABC Vancouver.
And I also want to spend a little bit of time hopping around to some of the other key races in the Lower Mainland. One of them, of course, the hot one was Surrey, the second biggest city in the province, eventually will be the biggest city in the province. Brenda Locke, Councillor Brenda Locke, winning, knocking off Mayor Doug McCallum by almost 1,000 votes. McCallum was running third a lot earlier in the night to Gordie Hogue, who was in second, but caught up to make it a closer race. Jeannie Sims and Sook Dhaliwal were not as competitive, not real factors at all. But Brenda Locke, with her promise to keep the RCMP and promise to turn back some of the other mistakes of the Doug McCallum era, is the new mayor in Surrey. Andy.
Well, I think it really touches upon, I think, the change in Surrey. I think a fundamental kind of shift in terms of Surrey, in terms of becoming the second largest city in British Columbia, and perhaps soon to be the first largest city, that, you know, that in about, that the arc of Surrey, I think, is very much this one of that of rapid growth, in addition to a very young population, through which I think really brings into a certain, I think, expectations or new expectations towards how leadership should occur in the city of Surrey, and that it's not necessarily really what's happened in the past, but then to those who can talk to the future and really what does that mean towards, I think, the kind of civic leadership that I think really, I think the movement from Doug McCallum to, I think, Brenda Locke, I think really, I think provides this kind of change. And I think that we'll see what happens, because of course it's not only going to be who sits in the mayor's seat, but then what's their relationship to the rest of council. That really, I think that it's important to kind of note that, you know, at this point the final look of council in Surrey and even in Vancouver is still a little more fluid. And I think to kind of see like how that final the final, I think, landscape will look like in terms of, you know, will Brenda Locke have a majority on council, or will she have to work with a very slim majority? That I think that's really going to be something to watch in the city of Surrey.
Mario.
It's important to note that she's going to have a majority. You know, she's got enough councillors to work with. I think she can get her plans across. It's the far cry from the super duper majorities that Diane Watts used to enjoy, but it certainly allows her to have a specific agenda and to do the things that she wants to do. The election was a little bit closer than people expected. I think Doug McCallum tried very hard to get his base out, but we're looking at a city where the final voter turnout is 34%, which is marginally better than the 33% we had the last time. So the sentiment for change isn't really materializing in people becoming more involved in the process. Yeah. It's essentially dissatisfied McCallum voters looking elsewhere.
And while speaking of Brenda Locke, we have Brenda Locke right now. I'll go to her right now and get her reaction to winning the mayoralty of Surrey. Brenda, how do you feel right now after this long campaign, after this long 4 years?
Yeah, thanks. You know what? Thanks for that, Bob. It has been 4 years of tough slugging, but I feel humbled. I feel absolutely humbled that the residents of this great city chose me, and I am so ready to get the job done.
And the job starts very quickly. You're not going to be sworn in for a few more weeks, but this is a big job, because the major promise you had is to keep the RCMP in Surrey and to end the Surrey police service. That's going to be you know, something's going to take a lot of your time, and how are you going to start that process to decouple Surrey with the Surrey police and then keep the RCMP?
Well, right away, I'm going to start with having a conversation with the officer in charge at Surrey RCMP. That's going to be my first order of business. And then I'll also be talking to Dwayne McDonald of E Division. And that's going to be my second order of business. And then we'll take it from there. But I have already started having the conversation, because obviously this isn't new to anybody, especially not to our staff. So I've already started the dialogue with city staff.
And Doug McCallum, of course, went down to defeat. He did accept the result and conceded to you. Of course, he will be in the news again at the end of this month for his public mischief trial. And there's still a lot of questions about how much his defense is costing taxpayers.
Right. And, you know, huge concern to the residents of this city. They do not want to pay his bills. And I don't believe they should be asking our city legal to figure out a way to get that money back and to make Mr. McCallum pay for his legal bills.
And finally, what will the first 100 days of your administration look like? What else are you planning within the first 100 days to turn the ship around and put your stamp on it?
You know, part of it is already right in front of us, and that is the budget. The budget has to have first, second, third, and fourth reading by the beginning of, or the end of December, Christmas time. So we will be going around the city, and I have said this before, we will be setting out a path where we go right into community, into the town centers, and talk to residents about what the budget consultation piece and what that looks like. That's critically important. We will, of course, be working on the police issues and how do we start to roll the whatever we have moved forward on back to the RCMP. We will also be talking to TransLink, because we have to start that dialogue very soon about more transportation in our city. That was a very, very big issue in this campaign. And I have said that I will tackle that and tackle that fast. And I'm also going to try and get bilateral meetings with all of our city cities that neighbor us. So I want to talk to the mayors of Langley's, of White Rock, and of Delta, and of Semiahmoo First Nations, and Frontland, just to start having those bilateral relationships, as well as the school board. Critically important that we talk to the school board. We need, obviously, if you saw the number of portables, we need more schools in our city, and we have to get together to start talking to the province about getting those things happening and faster.
That was new mayor of Surrey, Brenda Locke, on the Breaker.News podcast. We'll hop around to a couple other municipalities where there are some interesting races. Nearby in Langley Township, the comeback bid by Rich Coleman failed. Eric Woodward and his slate now runs city council in Langley Township.
I think it was a very tough undertaking from the get-go. We had a lot of people who were already associating themselves either with Eric Woodward or with Blair Whitmarsh, who finished in second place. And I think part of what we see here when it comes to Rich Coleman is, for somebody who spent so much time in caucus, who had many BC Liberal MLAs as friends, as colleagues, we did not see a single tweet in support of his candidacy in Langley Township. And I think that tells us all about whether this was the right moment to do something like this. I think that's one of the reasons why he finished third. Even his own colleagues, they didn't want to wish him well on social media.
Andy, looking at the North Shore race, West Vancouver, Mark Sager made a big comeback over Marianne Booth back in 2018. It went to a recount. It was a very small margin. However, next door, North Vancouver District, it was a close race. Mike Little got a little scared. He was almost edged by Matthew Bond, but Mike Little keeps his seat. Why this is interesting is because the North Shore is starting to raise its voice and demand action on transit because of transit. Congestion. The C bus was really the last big transit infrastructure expense or investment into the North Shore, getting people to and from, but the North Shore population is under stress because of development and density. And here you have, you know, a couple of mayors who might want to push the envelope and try to get some funding down the road for transit. What about these races? Do you think Mark Sager making a comeback in the mayoralty in West Vancouver and Mike Little keeping a seat in North Vancouver District will allow the North Shore to get its wishes on the agenda in Victoria?
Well, I think that as much as they may or may not get their wishes in Victoria, I think that it's important to kind of realize really the role of the relatively newly approved Transit 2050 plan. That you got to remember that there was a plan in terms of regional transportation that was passed, mind you, just before this election period. And really, I think the need for a level of discipline to ensure that those projects that I mean, agreed upon projects are being done. And I think that it's really, I think, really part on of a level of leadership to say that we are now promising ourselves to fulfill this plan for transportation in the region for 2050 and we're going to move forward. But I think that part of this, of course, is understanding, and there were, I think, several projects within the plan to really look at North Shore public transit. And really, I think that is interesting because, of course, with Mike Little, the big thing was the fact that he had meeting with Ken Sim. And I currently the name of the the Coquitlam mayor. Did he win? I think.
Yeah, Richard.
He did.
Yeah, everybody who was at that photo op one.
Everybody who was at that regional photo of all the and which was in itself also very unusual to have mayoral candidates from different municipalities endorse each other and come into this conversation about transportation win. And I think really it's almost, well, at least one I think has a level of optimism towards understanding the role of regional cooperation of regional consensus towards public transportation. That I think that's probably just as an important point as opposed to I think very specific projects through which I think are on that 2050 plan and really ensuring that those plans are still on board and really how they can still act collectively to advocate on well really on the provincial and the federal basis.
And on that note, it's also time to look at one of the predictions we made before at the start of the MMA panels with Mac and Mario and Andy, that the election would take place and the barge would still be on Sunset Beach. And before the polls closed on October 15th, I went down to Sunset Beach and saw it with my own eyes. The barge is still there. Of course, it's rapidly being disassembled by the crews to take it off Sunset Beach. But as we predicted, the election would come and go, but the barge is still there for now. And I guess the next question is, will the barge still be there or will there be a rainstorm before the barge leaves? So weather forecast, maybe next weekend we'll have some rain finally and our endless summer will be over. But the Kennedy Stewart era in Vancouver is over at Vancouver City Hall. The ABC era has begun and the Doug McCallum era is over in Surrey and the Brenda Locke era is beginning. And there'll be a lot more to talk about this in future and look forward to bringing you guys back on the Breaker.News podcast as these new councils get sworn in and get on their feet and start to fulfill their promises or not fulfill their promises. We'll see. Mm-hmm. So thanks again for joining us on the Breaker.News podcast. The MMA panel, Mackin, Mario Canseco, Research Co., and Andy Yan of the City Program at Simon Fraser University.
All hail the barge.
Don't matter what color you are, 'cause love will conquer hate, so you won't stand alone, you won't stand alone.
Former Deputy Premier Rich Coleman failed in his comeback bid in the township of Langley, where Councillor Eric Woodward won the mayoralty. A former BC Liberal politician who did succeed was Cash Heed. Here is the interview I did with Cash Heed on the night before the election.
What did you hear out on the campaign trail? What were people telling you in Richmond when you went to all candidates meetings, when you went to doorsteps? What were people telling you that they want for the next 4 years?
Well, let me tell you, the overwhelming issue has been this housing situation that we're in right now. And I think that's probably going to be the significant issue throughout every municipality, every city in British Columbia in this particular election. And it's too bad because it's a very, very important issue, and it has to be dealt with all three levels of government. And certainly the local governments can push the other governments to get involved in it. Yes, we all know we need to build more housing. We know we need to build attainable housing. We know we need to build housing for people that are, seniors now, people that have some social issues, some people that have some disability issues. We need to build all of that. This has hijacked the entire campaign, and it may be rightfully so, but there's so many other issues that are out there. So if I have to jump to the second issue that's out here in Richmond, it's the public safety issue. A lot of people are concerned about their own safety. A lot of people are concerned about their families. A lot of people are concerned about what's going on in Richmond. You have similar issues in Richmond that are appearing in Vancouver. You have the homelessness problem. You have the drug issue here in Richmond. You have the emotional health, mental health issues that people are facing. You have the property crimes in Richmond. You have the violent crime. Just look at the gang activity and the recent shootings that have occurred here in Richmond. One in the most affluent neighborhoods in Richmond and Sunnymead a couple of weeks ago where two gangsters were gunned down. So that is probably the second issue. And of course, there's an array of other issues with respect to farmland and all that. But if I look back over the last 6 weeks, it's been relatively boring type campaign, if I can use that description of it, because nobody has really come to the forefront and thrown something that is an issue that everyone can get on and make a comment about. I've been throwing out a few things, and I think there needs to be good government here in Richmond. I call our community, our current council, full of divisive inertia because it gets absolutely nothing done. Our current council, there have been a mayor, for example, he's been on council for 24 years, much too long. We should never have someone that gets into politics as the bulk of their career. You need to have your career. You need to be qualified before you even get into politics. And that's something that we really have to work on here if we're going to change the system. We need to go to, time-sensitive tenures in council. We need to look at fixed terms for council. We need to look at those types of issues to ensure that we don't get this continual inertia in council because the person has been there for so long. So term limits is a significant issue. However, Bob, it is really not overriding some of the other issues that are out there. But if you have to look at the dysfunctional city councils we have, even some dysfunctional levels of other governments that we have, it's simply because we have politicians that are getting in there for a career, really not public service. They need to have their career well before they enter politics.
And along the way, along the campaign trail, any surprises, anything that you weren't expecting?
No, the issues that came up at the all-candidates meeting and through some of the contact with the media have been issues that I think every candidate is pretty well prepared for. I think a lot of the rhetoric, and I'll use that term, from some of these candidates comes from the fact that there is no debates that do take place. You can't delve into an issue. You can't debate that with another member because there's too many people that are going for this specific role. And as a result, you don't have the time to do it. I don't even think the three candidates going for mayor really had any significant debates. That's when you get to really know what the person's position is, what their beliefs are on particular issues. And we don't have that at the municipal level.
I think you've already said some things that need to be changed in the process, term limits. But is there anything else that needs to be changed about the system, about the process, for 2026 for both candidates and voters?
Well, let me tell you, I think we've got to look towards more of an electronic version of how we deliver the vote. I think a lot of people are looking at the fact that they've got to go to the poll, for example, tomorrow. all day when they could sit at home. We managed to do everything else at home over the last 3 years during COVID. Why can't we vote from home? Why can't we build in the security within our systems to actually make that happen so we can get more people engaged in the voting process? I can tell you right now, when you have a low turnout of, for example, only 37%, and that's what they had here in Richmond in 2018, for your local election, something is wrong with the system. You've got to engage the voters more. You've got to have significant issues out there that they're going to talk about, that they're going to debate one another on. And you have to get the people that are on the voters list here in Richmond to get out and vote. And I think one of the ways you can do that is make it easier for them to vote.
That was Cash Heed, newly elected to Richmond City Council. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for the week of October 16th, 2022. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on the 16th of October in 1970, Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau invoked the War Measures Act during the FLQ October crisis in Quebec? Now you know. Send me your feedback. Send me your story ideas to Bob at thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit TheBreaker.News on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/TheBreakerNews. That's patreon.com/TheBreakerNews.
Until next week.